And so when he sees the maimed king, he is moved to ask, what ails you? That is to say, the quality of compassion and sympathy moves him. But he then thinks, oh, but a knight does not ask questions. And so he represses the impulse of his nature, and the quest fails. Then it takes him 5 or 6 more years to get back to the castle, you see. But the spunk and pluck of his hanging on to the quest and the revision of the mistake he made yields the healing of the land. So the sense of the Grail, and the sense, I would say, of most myths, is the finding of the dynamic source in your life so that the trajectory of the life that you live is something out of your own center and not something put on you by the society. And then there's the problem, of course, of coordinating your well-being and your virtue with the goods and needs of the society. But first you must find your trajectory, and then comes the social coordination.
So we could say that in certain parts of American society, we do have a wasteland existing, by and large, in our culture.
Well, I don't know what your impression is, Michael, but mine is that I think the majority of my friends are living wasteland lives. And now, since I retired from teaching, you see, you're teaching people who haven't come into the wasteland yet. They're at the point of making the decision whether they're going to follow the way of their own zeal, the star that's dawned for them, or what daddy and mother and the friends want them to do, or what they've got to do to earn money. The adventure's always in the dark forest, and there's something perilous about it. Since retiring, I've been lecturing to adults, for the most part. And those that I've been lecturing to are those that have felt, I need a new start, or I have to find a center in what I am doing that really meets my own life. And my impression is that many, many, many of our friends just are baffled. They're wandering the wasteland without any sense of where the water is, the source that makes things green.
I'm looking to explore those principles that come forth or apply when one does discover their innermost dreams and does get in touch with what it is we are to do. It occurs to me, as you talk about the dark forest,
yes,
and that one of the principles is that you have to be willing to take risks, that you have to be willing to go past what the normal rules or traditional concepts of the way things are. You have to go beyond that, don't you?
Well, indeed you do, not only for your own life, but because the way life is getting to be is different from the way it was. And the rules of the past are restrictive of life process. And the moment the life process stops, you're on the way to drying up. And the whole sense of myth is finding and having the courage to follow the process and to permit it. In order to have something new, something old has to be broken. And if you're too heavily fixed on the old, you're going to get stuck. That's what hell is. Hell is the place of people who could not yield their ego system to allow the grace of a transpersonal power to move them.
Something beyond our small self.
Right.
So it's like coming in touch with that deeper chord that resonates in the deepest part of life and being willing to let go and allow that process to unfold in ourselves.
And if one understands the spiritual sense of one's religious tradition, it will encourage one to do that and give one clues. But if one interprets it in terms simply of hard fact, you know, it's not going to help you.
Joseph, I'm sure many of our listeners are familiar with fairy tales, and we've all learned to grow up with fairy tales. What about present-day authors? Are you aware of any literature that has emerged or is emerging over the last several years that really is in touch with mythology and an historical perspective?
Well, Michael, I haven't been reading any of the most recent works. When I was myself shaping my own life views and all, there were a number of authors that meant a great, great deal to me, but I don't know whether they're still in the wind, you know. One, very important, was James Joyce. The Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man, Ulysses, were two formative books for me. And along with them, saying the same thing in another language, you might say, were the works of Thomas Mann. They meant a great deal to me as well. The Magic Mountain, I must say, was tremendous for me. In the world of poetry, W.B. Yeats has the messages, it seems to me. And T.S. Eliot, in a somewhat more stilted way, I feel that he knew about them but didn't feel them quite the way these other men did. Those are the people that really talked to me. Robinson Jeffers here on the West Coast, and Walt Whitman in Long Island. These are people that continually refreshed me. I was in the literature department as I was teaching, so there were a lot of people I had to know about and were supposed to teach. But those that really talked to me, I've more or less named. And then back to those, there were certain philosophers who supported them, so to say. For Joyce, Dante was a terribly important figure, and Aquinas. Those are men who understood symbols, the symbolic sense of the imagery of the Christian tradition. For Thomas Mann, the great people were Goethe, who's just inexhaustible of this stuff, Schopenhauer, Nietzsche. Then I also ran into Spengler, the Decline of the West, and a really great anthropologist, Leo Frobenius. These are the people who meant something to me. Now, since the Second World War, I don't find the momentum of those people being carried on. I think a whole new set of problems have emerged for young people today. And just what they are, I don't know.
What about the fact that we've had a great deal more explorations in the archaeological field and also in the anthropological field, that now we're coming in touch with shamanic traditions and cultures that we really weren't in touch with a few years ago? We're finding buried cities and places that we didn't know about a few years ago. What does that have to do with mythology? Is that expanding our understanding of mythology, or is it just kind of recovering what we already knew?
Well, I might say that keeping up with what is happening in these fields, and this has been a prodigious time. Here is where, for me, the active writing is going on in the present period since the Second World War. This is occupying me entirely. It's tremendous. It is opening up a whole new perspective on the unified history of mankind. And peoples who were outside of our archaeological discovery and work are now coming in. For instance, the Chinese are doing very important archaeological work. And the University of Hawaii, working in Thailand, and it's now been followed by the University of Pennsylvania working there, has unearthed a whole new dimension of the history of domestication of animals and plants, which means a transformation of society in the beginning of the Neolithic and the high cultures and all that kind of thing. And what comes out of it is what has been my theme right along. That all the religions and all the great mythologies and all the poetries of the world, when they are out of the great spiritual sources of mankind's greatest thoughts, they're all singing the same song. It's a great polyphonic song, so that no one has a right to say, we're it. Do you get me? People ask me frequently, what about the mythology for the world to come? You can't predict what your next mythology is going to be any more than you can predict tonight's dream. You know, it doesn't come from the place that intellectual thinking comes from. It comes from that source of life within which compensates for the limitations of the intellectual life. But I can tell you what it's got to be in terms of one's social commitment. One of the important things in mythology is to what social group do you belong? The social group now is the globe. No more of this tied-in horizon. And in the old mythologies, love was reserved for the in-group and nasty names for people outside. I mean, this is characteristic of mythologies everywhere. They've all grown up within horizons. Now those horizons are broken. And so what's going to happen? What are we going to do with the aggression? You know, the old saying of love your neighbor, but hate your enemy has to go. And Jesus was the first, as far as I know, who said, I say, love your enemy. Well, they're not enemies. They're our brothers now. And what are you going to do with that? The love now has to work really to temper and transform the aggressive hate thing. And that's what has to be taught through the symbols. The symbols are too culture-bound up to the minute, up to now.
It's interesting how we've taken modern technology in the area, say, of war machinery, weapons, and so forth, and we're still kind of relating to these weapons of incredible destruction so that we can, in the same breath, talk about mega deaths as a result of nuclear weapons. And yet we seem to be relating to them in the way we related to the musket and ball and the spear and shield. Isn't that interesting?
Yes. Well, the interesting thing and the dreadful thing is that they're going to be used against somebody. Do you see what I mean? And that somebody is, in terms of the required mythology, our brother, not our enemy. And there's a terrific lag in this extensive view of the range of our social unity.
We've been choosing too many electives and not really taking the required courses, right?
But it's something worse than that, Michael. I mean, as though people were afraid of the implications, because that's the dark forest thing. They are pulling back, and you have more and more accent on the in-group commitment. I don't care what the in-group is. It may be just your social class, or it may be your nation, or it may be your race, or it may be your religion. But the in-group thing is, well, it's almost as though people were accenting it more than ever out of fear of what's being asked of them, because there's no trust in the person on the other side. I wouldn't advise ridiculous trust, you know, but at least the move and the pattern of intention has got to be that of coordination and cooperation. It's got to be. And how the symbols have always given us our in-group against the out-group.
I'm just thinking of how we have, and going back to Christianity, and I think of the Dead Sea Scrolls and the scrolls that found at Qumran and so forth. Do you think that's going to change our perception and understanding of Christianity? Do you think that will permeate into the traditional Christian structure of religion?